Growing up, I loved playing computer games, but I have not found something in adulthood that scratches that same itch. Video games don't do it. I can't use that controller. It's just not it for me. But oh my goodness, I am so glad I recently started playing June's Journey. Okay, June's Journey is like I Spy meets Carmen Sandiego, meets The Sims, meets horror movies. It's so wild and it's so, so fun to play. June's Journey is a hidden object mystery game with a captivating detective story taking you back to the glamour of the 1920s with a diverse cast of characters. Each new scene takes you further through a thrilling murder mystery story that sets the main protagonist, June Parker, on a quest to solve the murder of her sister and uncover her family's many secrets. June is fabulous. She has a fabulous little hat and feather in her cap. She's at this family estate on this gorgeous island that you can decorate, which you know that I love to do. And then as you're going, you go into different rooms of the house. You find clues that are going to lead to the suspicious murder of June's sister and brother-in-law. It's so dark. Like, you're looking for clues inside of a murder scene photo. But also, all I want to do is find the trophy and the riding crop and the muddy footprint that might be a clue about, wait, was there another person there? It's so intriguing. It's so fun. I love playing it. At the end of the day, just sitting on the couch, you know, that state of mind where you're not ready to go to bed yet. You don't want to be watching TV anymore. It's sort of just background noise. I want to be looking around my little island for clues. And that's why I love having June's Journey. Right now, I'm in the chapter where we are really uncovering some salacious information. There seems to have been a third person there the night of the murder. And that is not what we believed at the beginning. So, you know, I'm ready to figure out more about this mystery third person because I think it might be the key to everything. And so you better believe I'm about to dive back in, and you can do just the same. Escape reality and immerse yourself in the world of June Parker. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
This is Emily,
Henley,
and Sammy,
and you're listening to Too Scary, Didn't Watch.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Too Scary, Didn't Watch, the horror movie recap podcast for those too scared to watch for themselves. I'm Emily, and I am too scared to watch scary movies.
I'm Henley, and I'm also too scared to watch scary movies.
I'm Sammy, and I love watching scary movies, and so I watch them so that you don't have to. And we've got a patron-chosen episode for you guys today.
Woo!
Very exciting. And if you want to jump straight to our recap, check out our timestamps in the episode notes and navigate to wherever
you... We're simply never going to not talk for 20 minutes up top. We're just never going to do it, but you don't have to listen.
You don't have to listen to it. You can skip it. There's links in the episode notes because I gotta know if anything scary happened to us this week.
Gotta know. Well, it was scary not being here for last week's episode.
It was scary.
I hate it
when you're not here. I hate it when you're not here, Emily, because I need to know what your reaction. The whole time I'm thinking, what would Emily think?
Well, I listened. And
what did you think? I mean, what did you think about the masks? The anti-masker, Kevin Williamson?
I did think you raised an interesting and valid point, Henley, that it does make me wonder. Does make me wonder. But that was scary. I hate to be away, but I'm going to talk about something else.
Do it.
And I'm sorry to talk about this.
No, don't apologize.
But it's just what's going on with me, which is that, okay, I changed my hair recently.
Wait, I want to know, Emily.
Okay, I changed my hair recently because sometimes you got to just change your hair and it's fucking fine to do.
Also, Emily, it looks so good.
Thank you.
I just need to start this by saying, if anyone who's listening doesn't know what Emily looks like, she looks dang good.
Oh, thank you so much. I used to have very, very, very blonde hair. I had like bleach blonde hair, platinum blonde hair for many years, and I loved it. I love it. It's to this day, it's my favorite way for my hair to be. But guess what? It's really damaging to your hair, and it's expensive, and it's a lot of upkeep, and it's just like it's a lot. And I hit a point where I was like, my hair is telling me it's time to move on, and I'm going to listen to it. It took me a while to listen to it, but I decided to listen to it. And I like change. Changing your hair is such a fun way to like feel different. It's easy. It's hair. It's temporary. You can do fucking anything to it. It'll grow back, whatever. So I went for a big change. Dyed my hair very, very dark brown. And, you know, it's always scary to do a big change. There were a couple days where I would look, every time I'd catch a reflection of myself, I'd be like, holy shit. Like, I would like get scared. You know, it was like,
Stranger in the house.
I think about that myself when I get my nails done. I look at my hand and I think, whose hand is that? I can only imagine if your hair is different.
That, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But that's all fine. You know, that's part of it. That's fine. That's good. Whatever. Who cares? I have to tell you guys, you know some of this already. Sam, I think you know more, but.
What?
The craziest fucking thing has been happening, which is that I have had truly so many people that I work with, all of them being women above the age of 50, letting me know how much they don't like it.
What? Wait, no.
Just being like, oh, you changed your hair. Why?
Yeah. No. So there's been, just it started with a lot of that. It started with a lot of like, you changed your hair. Yeah, why?
No.
Then a little more direct, I got some, the blonde was so sophisticated. So I got some of that.
Sophisticated.
I got some of that. I also started getting a few days after the first day showing up with, which is also, it's like, you know, that you're always like, nobody is thinking about you as much as they're thinking about you. But right. In this case, I was like, why the fuck is everybody thinking and talking about my hair? Like, it like felt so crazy. So then I got a couple days of women that I work with coming up to me being like, I really like your hair. With a tone of like, fuck everyone who says you look nasty. Like, it was so obvious. Like, it was like, I'm going to give you a compliment because everybody hates how bad your hair looks. And then it sort of has died down. It's been a couple weeks, you know, whatever. This is what I look like now. Fucking get over it. And then on Friday, I have not told this to you yet, Sammy. On Friday night, a woman who I do not know. I do not know this woman's name. We do not work in the same department. I don't know what department she works in. Walks right up to me at the end of the day. And it took me a second to process what she had said because she said it to me in Spanish. So what she said to me was, this is a direct translation. You were prettier with your hair blonde.
Oh my God. These ladies need to shut the fuck up.
Right up to me and says, you used to be prettier with your hair blonde. And I'm like, what am I supposed to say to this?
Why?
What?
Why do I need to know that you think this? What do you expect me to do about it? Why? Do I care that you think this?
And you don't know her.
And I don't know you.
Whoa.
And it's as if the vibe is as if I have like.
Is she above 50 as well?
Yes. It is that I have like, it's feeling as if I have like offended these people by changing my hair. That they need to let me know that I have disappointed them.
I'm so mad because
it's
they're
so weird.
Objectively wrong. They're
Thank
also
you.
Objectively wrong.
And
they're
but it also, really like, crazy.
Doesn't fucking matter. Maybe I look really ugly
it's
right
so
now.
So weird
but
to
who
comment.
Cares?
It's so weird to comment. It's so weird to comment. It's like they think that they have some kind of ownership over you when they literally don't even know you. It's
and,
so
and
weird.
Even if they did, they have no ownership over them. It's just like,
right.
No, you're of course.
It has been, I've never experienced anything like it. It has been so completely insane. It has happened. I'm telling you seven or eight different people.
Wow.
My mouth is just agape. I truly can't close my jaws. I can't close my mouth. It's on the floor. My jaw's on the floor. I feel so exposed and vulnerable in a workplace, no matter what.
Oh my God.
The idea of being in a workplace where someone is commenting on my appearance,
physical appearance, in a way to tell you that it's bad,
gives me heart palpitations.
It's been, I just can't. It's like so. That's why I was like so stupid to like get on the podcast and like talk about my hair. But whatever. But it's mainly just that this has been the strangest thing to experience over and over again. These women being like, I don't like your hair.
It's like, great.
Because like, what the fuck are you supposed to say?
Like, what do you say back? Like, oh, you know what? Let me go back and just dye it blonde again for you specifically.
Yeah.
Honestly, Emily, this makes me want to cry. It makes me want to cry.
Rude.
It's so rude. And it was like the week I got back from work after New Year's, and I was also dealing with like immediate wedding stress and like being back at work, and I dyed my hair and everyone told me that it was disgusting. I was like, I'm going to go home and die. Like, I would just like to go home and be dead and not exist in this space.
Yeah, just evaporate
for the rest of my life
into thin air.
Mm-hmm.
It's just been a weird time. But you know what? This one on Friday, because it was so surprising and so rude. Like, just this thing you can't say to someone. Like, it's just like so rude. Now I'm like, I'm going to dye my hair fucking jet black. Like, I'm like, fuck you. I'm going to give myself Courtney Cox from Scream 4 or whatever. Terrible bangs. I'm going to dye my hair black. Fuck you. I'm going to have the worst hair you've ever seen.
I would want it to be black. I think you would look good with that. I want to go up to that woman and be like, what the fuck is your problem?
What is her problem? What do we think her problem is?
I think that there's something. I bet that.
But it's not just one lady. It's like eight ladies.
Emily, it's because they're okay. They're jealous of your youth and your beauty.
They're like, I think they like are like mad I squandered the ability to have blonde hair or something. They're like disappointed in me. It's really weird, you guys. I don't know. Who cares?
That's like,
you know,
a deep-seated patriarchal thing they're dealing with in their own life.
I can't say I'm enjoying it.
No, it sounds really annoying, and I'm sorry that has been happening, and they're obviously completely wrong. You look gorgeous.
You do.
I love your hair.
Thank you. But just the greater point is that it's okay if I don't, but it's not okay to tell me that you think that.
Either way, like, it's like, keep your thoughts to yourself.
We just cannot be telling people what we think about their physical appearance if we don't know them, if they haven't asked for that, if it's not kind. We just simply can't be doing it. Can't be doing it, and a lot of people are doing it.
I haven't had that experience in a long time, and so it does feel shocking. But yeah, people, I guess, are still doing that. They're still doing that.
People are still doing that,
and they gotta stop.
They really gotta stop. So that's, I guess, it's kind of scary that people are still doing that.
Yeah,
I don't love it.
That is a little scary.
So how about you guys?
Henley, are you too seething mad to even say a thing now?
I've been steam coming out of her ears. I've been racking my brain for anything interesting to talk about. I have nothing. I have nothing to offer. Silas got the stomach flu. That was pretty scary.
God.
We watched Kiki's Delivery Service.
I need to see that one.
Yeah, we just watched Miyazaki films for like 36 hours straight. And while I placed towels and bowls around him
in an effort to catch vomit.
Yeah, I guess when you're two, you decide you have to vomit and you just go for it.
Yeah, it's any. Well, he wants.
Oh, he vomited
like,
all over your bed, didn't he? That's scary.
Well, he first started by vomiting all. Well, he woke up from his nap a little earlier than usual, and he was moaning, going, "Mommy!" But to be honest, he does this a lot. So I was like, this is a little more extreme than normal, but kind
is
of on
just
par.
Being dramatic.
And so I brought him into my bedroom and we're like cuddling on the couch together. Oh. And he's like waking up or wait on my bed, which I got to tell you, white sheets, white duvet, white comforter, white everything, white blanket. Why do I do this to myself? And, then you, before I know it, he's just throwing up literally all over my bed. I'm like,
oh,
how do I get to my phone as quickly as possible so I can text him that this has happened so I can force him to come home ASAP, as I'm like trying to hedge the difference between like comforting him, but also like controlling where the vomit goes.
Yeah.
And then from then on, it was like a good solid 12 hours of vomiting. And baby May is also sick. She has some kind of cold situation. It's different than the stomach flu. She sounds like a little pug. She's very, she's like, she sleeps in a little bassinet right next to our bed. And we sleep like face to face, like over the course of the night. I put her on her back and she likes, her face is up, and then over the course of the night she like scoots and then faces me and I'm facing her so I can like comfort her throughout the night too, you know. Yeah. And so by the end of the night we're like this, like face to face like this, and her little face is in front of mine going making like the grossest little pug noises you've ever heard. And so I'm like
funny.
Like fully sucking snot out of her nose every, you know, 8 hours using the Frida nose sucker. Anyone who's a parent is very familiar with the Frida nose sucking machine.
Do you think it would work on a cat?
Yes, you should get one. And
oh my God,
it just sucks it right up. You suck it right out.
Yeah. What do you think is the difference in nostril size between a cat and a tiny baby?
Not a lot. Not a lot at all.
Negligible.
Honestly, you should get one. They're at Target. They're at your local drugstore.
Frida nose sucker for cats?
You don't even need it for cats. I'm pretty sure it would work on
Bunk. Has just also, he's had a stuffy little nose for months now, and I had a sinus infection, and I just feel like we're both little stuffy guys.
You should get one.
Nasal aspirator for cats.
It's a thing.
All right. I'll get it. I'm sure he'll love that.
Good luck, though. It's much harder than it even is with babies.
Yeah, I would imagine so.
Bunk is at least trained for his inhaler, so he's like used to me putting a thing on his face. So
you have to have them keep their head still for a period of time. So you can, you know. So that would be the challenging part.
You can use a baby aspirator on a cat's nose, but in my experience, it is not very effective and most cats don't like it.
I mean, I can't imagine any cat liking it.
You'd have to really hold his head in one place.
Yeah, he's not going to like that.
But, you know.
Well, speaking of, my cats, my boys, my sons turned 8 this past weekend.
Wow.
Big, strapping 8-year-old men.
What is that in human years?
I don't
think there is quite a thing with cats like dogs. Not that there isn't like
it is
a
dogs.
7 years, I think, but I think that's even not entirely accurate.
I think cats on average live longer than dogs.
Yeah.
Depending. But cats can live into their 20s. And I feel like most dogs are teens, live into their teens.
Early teens.
Yeah.
Unless you're a Chihuahua, and then you can live to be like 18.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
But I had a scary thing happen. I did a bad thing. So this is a PSA. So no one does the bad thing that I did, which is that it's not related to Mac and Bunk turning 8. We're changing gears here.
Okay.
Which is that there was a bee on my doorstep. For like a day, like a full 24 hours, I kept passing it as I went in and out of the house and noticing. And the second day that I saw it, I went out and was checking if it was alive. And it was, but it was, you know, just not really moving around a lot. And so I had heard that you could give them sugar water and that can sometimes, they're just like exhausted and they need energy to be able to fly again. And so I made some sugar water. I looked up like bee sugar water and I made some and put a little spoon out for her. I guess all worker bees are female in all my research. Mm-hmm. And I left it out there. And then when I came back, she had like fallen into it and was covered in sugar water. So she couldn't fly again. And I looked up, can you wash a bee? And you can't.
Oh, Sammy.
I felt so bad. I really, really wanted to help her. I really love bees. And so
wash a bee?
I was like, I'll put her in some water. But so I moved her onto some flowers for her to live out her final days. And the PSA is that in now doing further research, it's better to just try to move them onto flowers in the first place. So they can eat from the flower without the risk of getting their wings stuck together. And if you do have to give them sugar water, just give it like a teeny tiny little drop and like supervise the feeding to make sure it doesn't get its wings sticky.
This is inspiring me to be a goddamn beekeeper.
I would love to be a beekeeper.
Sammy, you would be really good at that.
Don't tell them about this incident, but other
no,
than
no, no, no. This is a learning experience.
When applying.
That's a learning experience.
I did work on a documentary about murder hornets, which I learned a lot about bees during that experience. And they filmed a lot of beekeepers. And it just seems like a very peaceful thing. And I just feel like if you had bees, you would be happier, you know?
I think that.
I think it's just true.
Can't anyone just like be a beekeeper though? Couldn't I just like get into that if I wanted to?
You probably could because I feel like there's space there. I'm just like, where would I keep bees?
No, you need space. You need space. But I'm thinking
about.
But
I do think, anybody can kind of probably do it.
If you have a yard, you can do it.
Yeah. Any beekeepers out there, give us your tips and tricks. How'd you get into it? Are you allowed to just get some bees?
Where do you get bees?
Where do you get bees?
You probably have to find another beekeeper to like get you started.
Are there any like what's the like community gardens, but like community beehives? Can you like join a group?
There should be
because bees are extremely important to the environment.
I bet there's some sort of community beehive situation in LA that you could join.
I'm going to look into it.
I am going to join the handbell troupe and I'm going to start a goddamn community beehive in Greenwich, Connecticut.
And
a
book club.
Never see me again. You'll never see me again.
What's Henley doing? She's either with her bees or bells or books.
That's our Hadley.
That's our Hadley. Bees, bells, books.
If I'm not belling. And if I'm not belling, I'm booking.
If she's not doing any of those things, she might be with her baby.
Those are the last. Last in the lineup.
First check the bees, then check the bells, then check the books.
Then check the babies.
Okay, should we get into this week's episode?
Yes.
Yes.
This week, we are going to be recapping The People Under the Stairs. Came out in 1991, as I said. The patrons chose this. So thank you, patrons. I'd been curious about this one for a while. It was written and directed by Wes Craven, starring Brandon Quinton Adams, Everett McGill, Wendy Roby, AJ Langer, Sean Whalen, and Ving Rhames. And it is available to rent on VOD. Have you guys heard about this movie before?
I have not.
I haven't, but I've seen so many people ask us to talk about it. It's definitely something that's come up before.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not one that I mean, I guess it came out in 91, so we were little babies. So I obviously don't remember it coming out, but I have heard about it over the years and have been meaning to check it out, and I really enjoyed it. The People Under the Stairs has a 70% on Rotten Tomatoes, 57% on Metacritic, 6.4 on IMDb. Budget was $6 million. It made $31.3 million. And before he died, Wes Craven was working on developing this into a TV show. And I guess that is you know, not happening anymore. But Jordan Peele is currently producing a remake with Monkey Paw. I don't think he's directing, but so there might be another People Under the Stairs coming soon. The next couple of years. So that's kind of exciting. Mm-hmm. Wendy Robin and Everett McGill were cast after Wes Craven saw them on Twin Peaks. They're a married couple in Twin Peaks, and they are excellent in this. Wendy Robey says this movie was some of the most fun she's ever had on a film set and one of her favorite projects she's ever done.
Wow.
Just in contrast to some actors' rights violations that we sometimes talk about. It's nice to hear when someone has a really nice time on set.
That is nice.
I think it unfortunately might be one that's worse to hear about than to see.
Damn. Yep.
Because it's like early 90s kind of has still some of those 80s vibes where the tone is actually pretty silly, but the content is pretty disturbing. Mm-hmm. So without you seeing the like unhinged, crazy performances, it might just sound very scary. So we'll
warned.
Keep that in mind.
People have warned us about this. I've ignored the warnings. I've tried to say disconnection.
I haven't seen any warnings
possible.
About this one.
Yeah, I didn't either. I kind of didn't know that it was going to be too dark.
I think the one we had Carl Tart on, he was like, the People in the Scares scared me. I feel like I remember him saying that.
Yep.
And I feel like, maybe did we watch like one of the documentaries we watched? They mentioned People Under the Stairs. I just feel like I've heard about this movie periodically throughout our podcasting, and it's made me worried.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to see how it goes.
Yeah. Okay.
Good luck to us all.
Good luck to us all.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
I have tried a lot of meal kits in my day because I don't like to cook. I need as much help as I can get when it comes to meal times. But a lot of the kits I've tried, you know, they leave a little something to be desired. They're not super great quality, or maybe there's not great variety, or they feel just kind of unhealthy. So imagine my surprise when I found Marley Spoon and discovered it doesn't have to be that way. You can have it all. I'm so happy this podcast is sponsored by Marley Spoon. They created the best tasting meal kit money can buy, and with my code TOOSCARY, you can get up to 25 free meals. They have over 100 meals to choose from each week, so you will not be getting bored. Last night, I made a shrimp burrito bowl that was so good, and tonight I'm making a Shion-style cumin turkey burger with pickled veggies and five-spice fries. Excuse me, am I a five-star chef? You have any idea how boring all the stuff I usually make is? This is such a treat. And usually for something like this, I would pay probably $40 to have something delivered to me, and it would probably be gross and soggy by the time it got here anyways. So thank God for Marley Spoon. And you can customize many of the recipes. So whether you're looking for vegetarian, family friendly, low carb, they got you covered. They also have an online market of pantry essentials like snacks and ready to eat options. I'm telling you, you can have it all. I got a kit to make cookies in my first box. So experience the most personalized meal kit today with Marley Spoon. Head to marleyspoon.com/offer/too scary and use code TOOSCARY for up to 25 free meals. That's right, up to 25 free meals with Marley Spoon. One last time, that's marleyspoon.com/offer/TOOSCARY for up to 25 free meals. And make sure you use my promo code TOOSCARY so they know I sent you.
All right, you guys, I'm here again to talk to you about Skims, except this time, not about their underwear, this time about their t-shirts. Have you guys tried their t-shirts? Because I hadn't until recently, and holy shit, I have been on the quest to find the perfect t-shirt for my entire adult life. And little did I know, they were just hiding at skims.com. So I have their cotton jersey long sleeve t-shirt in kind of this like deep blue, gorgeous color. And it's a very form-fitting t-shirt that's extremely flattering. I've worn it over and over and over again since I got it, and it really holds up in the wash. You can just throw it in the washing machine, holds up, keeps its shape. The quality of the fabric is so good. I also have the boyfriend t-shirt. That one's so cozy, more relaxed. I just am obsessed with them. And now I want all of them. So I will slowly be amassing my collection of Skims t-shirts for the rest of my goddamn life. Anyway, so I really can't recommend them enough. Go to skims.com to shop them, and they're available in sizes extra, extra small to 4X. Plus, you get free shipping on orders over $75. And if you haven't yet, be sure to let them know that Too Scary Didn't Watch sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select Too Scary Didn't Watch in the drop-down menu that follows.
My mom has had a pretty wild life, a lot of interesting stuff. She was in a couple popular bands in South Africa in the 80s. She's traveled all around the world, and she is so full of stories that I'm still finding out new things about her. So this Mother's Day, I know just what to get her. It's called Storyworth, and Storyworth helps you preserve those memories and stories from your mom or mother figure for years to come. Here's how it works. Each week, Storyworth emails your loved one a question. You can help choose the questions if you'd like. Some that I've asked my mom are, what was your first boss like? What were your favorite toys as a child? And all they need to do is respond to the email with a story. It can be long or short. They can even include pictures if they want. Sky's the limit. So you can enjoy their retelling of your favorite stories and new stories you've never heard before. After a year, Storyworth compiles all their stories into a beautiful keepsake hardcover book that you'll be able to share and revisit for generations to come. I love this. I love having these kinds of physical items, whether it's a journal or a photo book. I know we can have all this stuff on our phones now or the computer, but it's just not the same. Having something actually tangible is just the best. So give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift that you'll all cherish for years, Storyworth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/too scary. That's storyworth.com/too scary to save $10 on your first purchase.
The seasons are changing. We are starting to have warm days in Los Angeles. And if you're like me, every time the seasons change, I realize I actually hate every single thing I own and need to swap everything out. And that is a daunting task, but imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach. Like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50 for those places where it is still chilly, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, yes, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes, so you can feel great about the items that you are purchasing. For example, I purchased a pair of clogs. They are so comfortable. I have lusted after a pair of suede clogs for so long. They're pricey other places, and I just could never justify it for shoes that I'm basically treating like outdoor slippers. And I got a pair at Quince. They are amazing. I truly love them. So if you too would like to be walking around in gorgeous pieces that make you feel happy and comfortable at a price that you can feel good about, go to Quince. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/too scary for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/too scary to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/too scary.
So I will say a trigger warning for child abuse. Okay, but we begin with a tarot reading, and we're seeing some tarot cards being laid down. We're hearing the voices of a brother and sister, Ruby and Fool. She pulls up the Fool card and says how that's him. And, you know, we look at the Fool card. There is someone looking like he's almost dancing at the edge of a cliff. Is that how you would describe it, Emily? It's like you're kind of moving through life,
not looking,
unaware of the dangers
Yeah.
around you. It's like not necessarily a bad thing. It's like a nice ignorance is bliss type of thing. But anyways, so this is maybe how he's gotten his nickname, Fool. This is our protagonist. His real name is Poindexter. Really cute. But everybody calls him Fool after the tarot
reading.
This
is the little boy
from
the trailer. He looks really cute.
He's very cute. And he's he says later that he's 13. I would have guessed 8.
Oh my God. I would have guessed really young. Yeah.
Yeah.
13-year-olds are really small. It's crazy.
13 is small. Well, it also can really vary. Kids can look very different at 13.
It's true.
Yep. So we go into the rest of the house and we see that Ruby and Fool's mother is sick in bed and they can't afford the treatment for her. And we meet a guy named Leroy. This is Ving Rhames. Leroy tells Fool that they're also, because they're kind of like whispering to each other, trying to communicate something that they don't want Fool to hear. Leroy doesn't care about protecting Fool's feelings or anything. So he's like, oh, you guys are being evicted because you're late on your rent and you don't have enough money. He asks Fool if he's got any money to chip in. Fool says no. And Leroy says, well, I know where you can earn some. We also have heard about the landlords of this building that are evicting them are called the Robesons, and they own like 50 buildings in the area, and they're just basically waiting for everybody to move out so they can tear them all down and build office buildings type of thing. Evil landlords, very unsympathetic to everyone's unique situations, that whatever, like they don't care that she's needs to be in the hospital and whatever. So don't like these landlords. And so now we cut to the landlords in their big fancy house being very casually racist, being like, we need to clean up this neighborhood. It's getting disgusting. They're white, obviously. And they're referring to the black families that live in the building, and they're just like, we need to get this neighborhood nice and cleaned up, and just real, real villain shit. And they have a daughter named Alice, who they are also just being really mean to right off the bat. Just she comes in and brings them dinner, and they're just yelling at her like, watch where you're going. Don't step on that or whatever. They're just being assholes to her as well. Now we go back to Fool, and he is walking into his building, and the set design on this is honestly like Beau is Afraid. This is like the neighborhood is like as if there's like dogs jumping out and like fighting each other. It's like as if all of your anxieties of like, like, oh God, and there's just danger at every turn. It just like really reminded me of the Beau is Afraid opening. But he goes into this apartment. I think maybe it's his sister's apartment. It's not the one that they live in, but Leroy and his sister Ruby are there, and Leroy tells him that he's found the landlord's address and has heard that they have basically like treasure, like coins that they were going to sell that are worth a lot of money. I can't remember how he learns this, but he knows that they have some money in this house and wants to rob them. And Ruby tells them to leave it alone. She doesn't like that house. There's weird stories about them, and it's not a good idea. But it seems like Fool is being manipulated to feel like he needs to step up for his family because they're in a like tight financial situation. So he secretly agrees to do this. Back to the Robeson's house. Mrs. Robeson is feeding their daughter, Alice. Alice is also like 13. Mrs. Robeson and Mr. Robeson call each other mommy and daddy. And
ew!
Mommy.
And so mommy is feeding Alice and is like, do you love your mommy? And she's like, yes, ma'am. And she says, yes, ma'am, what? And she says, yes, ma'am, I love my mommy. And it's very disturbing.
Ew.
She's clearing away her plate and starts yelling at her, where's your fork? And Alice is clearly very afraid of her and immediately starts panicking and saying, oh, I think I just dropped it. It's over here. Crawls on her hands and knees into the corner of the room. And one of the vent covers, grate covers, comes off, and a very pale hand with long, nasty fingernails reaches out and hands her a fork. And she taps the hand with a nice little pat, like, thank you, and like closes it back up.
Okay.
Well, that's unexpected.
Yeah. And then the dad comes in and the mom is saying, like, Alice has been so bad. She's been feeding that thing in the wall again.
What's in the wall?
And then the mom says to the dad, or the dad starts like taking off his belt, and she says, remember not to bruise her face as she walks out. And the dad says, bad girls burn in hell. And we cut away from that. So pretty horrible. Now we're seeing outside Leroy and Fool and one of their friends, Spencer, are scoping the house. They've got their van outside and they're kind of watching their movements, and nobody's really coming in or out of the house. So they make Fool go to the front door dressed as a Boy Scout, saying that he's selling cookies. He knocks on the door and Mommy answers it.
No, Mommy. Wait, does she not have a name? She just
Mommy?
I
can call her Mrs. Robinson. She does not have a name. And IMDb,
no, I want you to call her Mommy.
She's credited as... It's probably a word Henley hears too much. I don't think she wants a negative.
Oh, that's a good point.
No, I thought that to myself, and then I thought, no, I'm just not going to think about that. I'm not going to think about it.
Fool goes up to the door. She answers and is not letting him in, saying, no, thank you. No, sorry. We don't want anything. And immediately slams the door in his face. So he asks if he can come in and use the bathroom. She says no. So they switch tactics, and now Spencer is dressed as a gas company worker and goes up and says, I need to come in and check your gas meters. She says they're not inside, and he says we have on our list here that they are, and we can call the police if you don't let us in. But Spencer's a white guy, and so I feel like she's like a little less
racist,
to him. Yeah, and is like, thinks like, oh, we can all be freely racist here. So she's like, you know, there's just been so much more crime in the area. The neighborhood's really changing, so you got to be careful who you let in. And he's like, I totally understand. So she lets him in. Leroy and Fool are still in the van, and Leroy's getting really antsy, being like, he better not take those coins for himself. He's going to steal all the coins. Doesn't trust Spencer. But we're watching the house waiting for Spencer to come out. Spencer does not come out.
Oh.
And eventually Mrs. Robeson comes out, gets in her car and drives away.
Oh.
So they decide to break in to go find Spencer. And Fool, as they break in the first door, there's like so many security doors. It's like the front door opens into this little front room that has a big metal door that they're prying open. And then the next room has another metal door.
A thousand red flags. So you're calling the FBI immediately.
Yeah, this is.
They need to be getting the FBI on this.
Fool is saying, like, I don't think this is a good idea. He says, I wrote down this quote because it really threw me. He says, it's the first day of my 13th birthday. That could be bad luck. The first day of your 13th birthday, Fool? You only get one day.
Was that the day after his birthday or the day of his birthday?
I think what he means is the first day of his 13th year. But it just kind of made me laugh. First day of my 13th birthday. Hmm. Anyways, and Leroy tells him he gets it. It is unlucky regardless, because you're too old to get tit and too young to get pussy.
Wow.
Way too old to get tit.
Way too old. Yeah.
Oh, you know, 13, the exact age where you're too old to get tit and too young to get pussy.
What?
Just precisely in between those two things. Just right there. You've just arrived. A Oh, yeah, 13. That's what we all remember 13 as, that's for sure.
Oh, man.
So they break past the second security door, and Leroy's feeling really proud of himself. And then a Rottweiler runs and charges at them. Big old guard dog attacks Leroy. They struggle with it for a while, but are eventually able to lock it in the previous room that they have just come through. So, but now that's blocking the way they got in. So I'm just thinking, well, that's probably not great. Mm-hmm. So now they're in the kitchen. There's locks on everything, on all the cabinets. It's a very, the house is grungy. It's pretty gross inside. It's like messy and everything looks really old and dark. And they're just feeling like it's got a weird vibe in here. They're hearing some noises in the walls. Leroy says, nice to know rich people get rats, too. We think it's probably not rats.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then he hears some steps overhead and thinks, that's Spencer. I'm going up there. Make sure he's not getting those coins for himself. So Leroy goes upstairs while Fool stays downstairs. And Fool finds a cellar door, like a base, goes down into a basement under the stairs.
Oh, no.
And he finds Spencer's clipboard. He had like a gas worksheet prop thing on a clipboard. Finds that and then sees some shadows moving down there and hears some moans. And he gets scared and is about to run back up. But then there was a moment earlier where Leroy kind of tells him maybe he's not cut out for this. Maybe he's too scared. And so he feels like he has to psych himself up, be brave. He goes back down there and finds Spencer's dead body.
Oh, my God. They made quick work of that.
Yeah. And Spencer does have a gold coin in his hand. But he's very clearly dead. And for some reason, I think Fool is trying to get him out of there. He's like, I'm going to get you out of here. But he's a small little boy and this is an adult man and he's dead. And so seems like a waste of energy at this point. But as he's trying to grab him, we see there's all these wood planks kind of fencing off a different part of the basement. And we're seeing some lights coming from back there and hearing some moans and eventually see a bunch of people just down there. We don't get a good look at them. And they're just going like, not saying anything. Almost like zombies.
I really don't like moaning.
Yeah. No, it's not a nice sound. Although sometimes when you're sick, it feels really good to moan.
I was going to say, when I heard, when you said, mentioned Silas moaning, I was like, I don't know. I don't think I ever let myself just like moan when I'm
something about it feels really nice,
uncomfortable, but I think that does sound nice.
Lamaze breathing is a thing for a reason. It doesn't work, but like when you're giving birth, you need to like moan. You need to be like, oh,
I feel like it's not dissimilar to how we want a room to scream in, a scream room, a padded soundproof scream room. It's like a release of something.
There's no choice but to do like a guttural scream. And I feel like sometimes when you're really nauseous, you want to moan too. Yeah. And also, if you're a person trapped under the stairs,
you might want to moan.
You might want to moan. You might want to let off some steam by moaning.
Yeah, exactly.
So they start pulling Spencer's dead body under the wood fence thing. And Fool is pulling it back, trying to grab it back, saying, no, no, like, what are you doing? He pulls it back and they had gotten his arm and his arm is all torn and eaten now.
Ew!
They were immediately chomping on him. This obviously terrifies Fool. So he jumps back and then one of the people down there jumps on him and is yelling and it's very scary. And so he is able to throw him off and he runs back up the stairs to go into the house. When the stairs turn into a ramp, they flatten. And so he slides all the way back down into the
this
basement.
House is full of surprises.
It's got lots of little tricks and traps.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a lot of work has been put into this house.
You think they could put a little TLC into cleaning it up, you know?
True. Less
put so much work into it.
Less tricks and traps, more just general tidying.
Yeah. Tricks, traps, and tidy.
Tricks, traps, and tidying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's my goal for 2024. Less tricks and traps and more general tidying.
So he sees, he gets a good look at this one that jumped on his back, and it's hard to tell if this person is trying to hurt him or not, because he jumped on his back, which isn't a necessarily friendly gesture.
Uh-uh.
But he's now not, like, attacking him. He's kind of got his hands up, and he's just going like, oh, oh. But he can't speak, it seems, and so we don't know what he wants. Fool runs up the ramp. He just, like, gets enough momentum that he doesn't even need the stairs. He gets up, gets back into the house, and now sees Alice and tries to follow her. But as he does, he sees the Robesons coming home. Their car pulls into the driveway, and Leroy has parked their van in their driveway, which I was like, this is so dumb. If you're robbing a place, to park in that place's driveway. So now that's they're parked in, because the other car has pulled in behind them, and the Robesons are home. Mommy and Daddy are home.
Mm-mm.
Fool runs to find Leroy and tells him, we got to get out of here. Spencer's dead. They're home. So they run downstairs trying to get out of there, and they find the front door, which is different from the way they came in. There's like two entrances, thankfully, but they reach for the door handle and are immediately electrocuted. This is another little trick and trap, little booby trap. And so they can't open the front door. All the windows, by the way, are like reinforced. None of them are breakable. They're like bulletproof glass, essentially.
Jesus.
That is bars on the windows. They're not going to be able to get out of a window. And because the Robesons are home now, they open the doors and let the dog in. And so the dog runs in, attacks Leroy. Fool comes up with an idea, grabs Leroy's hand as the dog is biting Leroy, touches that doorknob, electrocutes all three of them.
And that's such a fool.
It stuns the dog. Dog is down for the count for the time being. They both run upstairs. Mr. Robeson obviously knows they obviously know someone is in here. And they're saying things like, there must have been that gas electrician guy. He must have had a friend. They like know that it was a
scheme.
Yeah. And so Mr. Robeson has his shotgun, and they're upstairs, and Leroy hides in a closet and won't let Fool in there with him. He's like, you find your own place. She's like, okay, asshole. So, but just as he closes himself in that closet, Mr. Robeson presses some button, flips a switch downstairs that locks every door in the house. It like goes into lockdown mode. Things slide over the windows.
Who do you hire to do all of this?
I don't know. And like, does that person ask any questions? Like, why are you doing this?
I mean, I guess maybe they can do it themselves, but it seems like a lot of particular knowledge you'd have to have.
Yeah, they do. Mr. Robeson seems like the type that might be into that kind of stuff.
Yeah, he's clearly committed.
Yeah. So all the doors are locked. Leroy's in a closet, but Fool did not make it in anywhere. So he's just out in the hallway with nowhere to go into. And Mr. Robeson is coming up the stairs. And then the same guy that jumped on Fool earlier bursts through a wall behind Leroy in the closet, causing Leroy to like break through the front of it screaming, I guess, and because it really scares him, obviously. Mm-hmm. But then Mr. Robeson is right there, comes upstairs and shoots Leroy, kills him.
Oh my god. Okay. Oh, bye. No. Bing.
Bye. Yeah. And they are mommy and daddy are going, yeehaw, we got him, we got him. They start dancing. Yeehaw. They go, oh, daddy, oh, daddy. And they're dancing around, celebrating killing him. And it's very gross. But the good news is that they don't suspect that fool is in the house. They think there was just one other person. So they're not necessarily checking. Like he was hiding like around a corner. And so they haven't seen him. They don't know that he's there. And Fool finds a vent cover that flips open that's just big enough for him to crawl through. And so he goes into where the other guy in the walls is that we saw Alice feed earlier. There's one that's seemingly able to move around the whole house through the walls, where the other ones are all confined to this basement the stairs.
And this is presumably the one who just did that to Ving and the one who jumped on his back.
Yeah, I don't know why he did that to Ving.
I think to save Fool.
Maybe to save Fool. So Fool crawls in here and he finds some human remains and he's really chill about it. Doesn't scream, even though it's a very scary thing to see.
Yeah.
He is crawling around in there and Mr. Robeson does hear someone in the walls, but he thinks it's the guy that's normally in the walls.
That's in the walls.
Yes.
This is when it's nice to have somebody in the walls.
Yes. And so that the person in the walls, his name is Roach. And so he thinks it's Roach and he's yelling out, Roach, like, I'm going to kill you. And Fool is crawling through little tunnels in between the walls, in between the rooms, and finds an entrance into a room that Alice is in. I think it's just the bathroom, and she's standing in there and she looks completely shocked and scared and is not saying anything. And he says, haven't you ever seen a brother before? And she goes, I've never had a brother. He's like, no, a black person. And she says no, because she's never left the house before.
Oh my God.
She's never been outside. And anyone who tries to get outside ends up in the basement.
What the fuck?
And she tells him that mommy and daddy tried to find a perfect boy child, but each one was so bad that daddy had to cut out the bad parts and keep them in the basement.
Ew.
So we're thinking they probably mostly have their tongues cut out, which is why they can't talk.
What?
And she tells him about Roach and says Roach got out and he drives daddy crazy, but he's my friend.
Oh, Jesus fucking Christ.
Fool is trying to figure out how to get out. She's basically like, you can't. There's no way to get out. As they're he's basically like, well, I'm going to get out. I'm going to figure out a way to get out and I can help you get out as well. But at that moment, daddy comes upstairs, hears they're talking, got his shotgun, and he is now dressed in like head to toe bondage.
He's
covering his head and everything. It's really surprising. Just was not expecting this. And he's yelling like, I know you're here. And it's unclear at this point if he knows that there's someone else there or if he's still hunting Roach. But at this point, also, we see mommy downstairs feeding the dog Spencer's hand.
Ew!
And at some point, the cops arrive. They quickly, mommy, you know, brushes herself off, goes outside, and they're looking at the van that's parked there and she's saying, yeah, like I think someone broke in, but they're not here anymore. And the cops ask to come inside to search. And she says, no need. We searched the whole house. There's nobody here. And the cops obviously are like, not going to do shit. They're like, oh, like keep your doors locked, ma'am, and make sure you're safe out there. And she's like, oh, you can count on it. Cops leave.
Ugh.
Oh, like also Fool is like banging on the windows while they're outside, but it's soundproof and it's that nobody hears it.
Thought of everything.
But while they're outside, they see in the van the Boy Scout outfit that he was wearing earlier and now realize that he's part of the scheme as well. And so they head back inside. They know he's in there now and they're like, he's in there with our little girl, our perfect angel.
Gross.
Yeah, the implication here being, I was like, this is like a birth of a nation. Like, I don't like what's being implied here. But so they are still in this bathroom and Roach opens up like a cabinet that he, there's a little hidden door in that they can go into. And so they run in there and Mr. Robeson sends the dog in through that trapdoor as well. And it's basically just like, kill them, kill them. And they're running through all these little passageways and crawl spaces. And the dog's about to get to them when Roach pulls a lever and the like ground floor beneath the dog drops down to a slide, dropping him all the way back down into the kitchen where the Robesons are.
This is a Looney Tunes house.
It's a Looney Tunes house. It's silly. Now Roach and Fool get into Alice's room, and Alice, this is when she confirms to Fool that Roach's tongue is cut out because he like talked back.
Are these like people they kidnapped?
I feel
like
that's
their own children.
That's we're not sure. We're not sure.
She is their actual daughter, we think. And these people, we don't know if they're also their children or not.
I feel like because there's so many of them, we kind of assume some of them must be kidnapped. Maybe some are...
people just like walked in like unsuspecting or came to the door or whatever.
Yeah.
These people are really weird.
Really weird. And that's, I think Fool says that.
Really fucked up.
He says to her, your dad's a real mother. And then he's like, your mother's a real mother too. And mommy and daddy walk in and see them all in Alice's room and grab Fool. Roach makes it out through the little trapdoor, but daddy shoots the shotgun. It's not fun to say daddy in this.
It's so weird.
In this setting. He shoots, and it looks like maybe he gets Roach, like he shoots like right where he is, but Roach still is able to like crawl away, but it might have been a hit. We're not sure. Mr. Robeson grabs Fool, is taking him downstairs, throwing him down into the basement, while Mrs. Robeson takes Alice and is screaming at her and takes her downstairs to mop up blood. I don't know whose blood it is. What happened with blood
Spencer's?
Downstairs? Yeah, maybe. Must be. But she's just like, clean up this filthy... She's like at a level 11. She's just absolutely losing her shit. And then she's like... Alice is in a nasty nightgown also, by the way. And,
great.
And, but she now gets her nasty nightgown covered in blood because she's having to mop up all this blood. And then that sets... her mom off as well, and she's like, I get you this beautiful dress that I spent hours making, and you get it covered in blood. And she grabs her and drags her upstairs and runs a scalding hot bath. This is like very upsetting, and like makes her get in the bath and like scrubs her skin raw as the like Alice is like screaming in pain. Mr. Robeson is downstairs with Fool. He's also shoved Leroy's dead body down there, and he's basically skinning Leroy and cutting off chunks of Leroy
and feeding
it to the people under the stairs. And they're all like clamoring for it. And he has blood on his mouth too. So I guess he also ate it and is like says to Fool, like, I like to keep him starving. And so they're just like so hungry that they gobble up any of this human meat that they're given. That seems to be
like that we've recently done several episodes of people without tongues gobbling up nasty stuff.
Yeah.
I really don't like it.
Yeah. It's not.
Do you think you would do it if you were that hungry, or would you just let yourself die? Like, don't you think at a certain point you'd just be like, no, I'm going to die. But would you not be able to do that?
I feel like I'd try it, but then you'd probably throw up. But they probably have done that already. And then maybe you get used to it.
I think it totally depends on the context.
I feel
context
like
is everything here.
I feel like your will to survive is stronger than you even want it to be. Like
it is,
yeah,
but
right?
I just
it's
read
like too strong.
I just read The Vaster Wilds by Lauren Groff, mm-hmm. which is a book that just came out. And in it, there's cannibalism. And man, I got to tell you, it does become a moral conundrum.
Yeah.
And I think that if it's someone who's been unjustly killed, you're not going to want to eat them if you were like their friend, even if you're starving.
Yeah.
You're not going to want to, but you still might do it.
I don't know. That's the thing.
This isn't their friend. This isn't their friend. This is someone.
No. This is different. This is a different. We're not talking about people under the stairs situation. Then you don't know whose meat this is. You know it's being handed to you. But as to whether you would want to live under the stairs, would you have the fortitude to starve yourself? Or would you want to just eat whatever's given to you?
I think I'd probably eat it, unfortunately.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. I wouldn't be happy about it. But I think,
I have no
like,
fucking idea.
I feel like I get so hungry even in just one day. If I like.
I agree. But I think that if I was living under the stairs, I'd be like, I want to die. And so I'm going to do what I can to do to die.
Maybe.
Yeah, right? Like that's. But maybe you become like kind of feral, right?
If you want to live. That's
they do seem feral. Yeah, they're like definitely. And as we get better looks at them, they look almost like zombies in terms of their skin is slightly discolored and just they're don't look like normal humans. Like they have gone through transformations from like being in here for so long.
Yeah. Well, they're certainly not getting their vitamins.
No. So. Mr. Robinson goes back upstairs. I think he throws Fool in the place with all the other people under the stairs, like opens the
like he's gonna be one
door and is throwing him in there like, yeah, he's going to be one of them. And they're all in there and they're all kind of approaching him. We're getting good looks at them now. They seem really scary, but also hard to say because they can't speak and they're all just kind of moaning and walking towards Fool. So we don't know what to make of this. Mm. And then as this is happening, Leroy's body seems to reanimate and it's like,
what? He was just being skinned.
Yeah. It's like a bloody skinless body. That's like, whoa. And then it drops and we see that it's Roach playing a hilarious prank.
Roach, you gotta have fun where you can find
and
it.
And Fool is like, oh, thank God, Roach. And I was like, you're seeing your like friend's skinned alive, reanimated corpse and just immediately like, ha, good one. And
I mean, Leroy wasn't a very good friend, I guess, to be fair.
No, that is true. And I think he had
I find it funny.
No, probably not. But Roach is able to get Fool out of this enclosure. And I don't know why he doesn't get all of them out, but he doesn't. He just gets Fool out. And Mr. Robeson hears something happening again, sends the dog down. We see that Roach has, in fact, been shot and it doesn't look good.
Mm.
He's bleeding out and he takes Fool into another one of the crawl spaces. So they're somewhere in a little crawl space and Roach is losing steam. Looks like he's bleeding out and he hands Fool a little sack filled with gold coins.
Like oh, the coins. I completely forgot about the coins.
The coins are here and he's writes on the wall in dust, Alice. So in his little dying moments, he's just saying like, go like save Alice as well.
Roach is so sweet.
Roach is so sweet.
Yeah. And then Roach dies.
Oh, Roach.
And Fool goes back up into Alice's room. I think the dad is in there being like very creepy with her, just like, you've been such a bad girl today. And the dog is really barking at the door because it knows that Fool is in the vent in her room. And the dad opens the door and is like, shut the fuck up, and slams the door in the dog's face. But in that like moment of distraction, Fool gets into the room, punches him in the dick.
In the dick?
Whoa.
Yeah. And grabs Alice and they go into the walls again.
All right, Fool.
They are hiding quietly because the dad's listening, trying to see if he can pinpoint where they are. And then Fool has to sneeze. And he's like, I gotta sneeze. Oh, no. And sneezes. And this is a scene in The Matrix as well. The Matrix ripped off people under the stairs.
Mm.
I feel like I've been referencing The Matrix in like every single recap we've done lately. I did.
Yes.
It just is a reference point for me for everything.
For everything.
I have to find a connection in everything. Mm-hmm. So the dad lets the dog into the wall again. So the dog is chasing them and he attaches a like knife to the shotgun, making it a bayonet, and is just stabbing through the wall where he thinks Fool is.
He could be stabbing his daughter. He's really not thinking this
through. He's really not thinking it through. Fool is being attacked by the dog, fighting off the dog, and puts the dog against the wall, and the dog gets stabbed. And
I mean, you hate to see it, but I guess in this context, you know better than the alternative.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't like to see a dog die regardless. It's not the dog's fault, but...
And I gotta say, this dog was a great actor. I was very impressed by this dog performance. I've recently said how Anatomy of a Fall has like the best dog performance I've ever seen. I think People Under the Stairs is in that conversation.
Wow.
Okay. That's huge. Huge, huge, huge.
The two best dog acting jobs I've ever seen.
Over 30 years difference there.
Yeah.
In times.
I mean, I'm not easily impressed.
No.
So the Mr. Robeson pulls the bayonet out of the wall, sees it's dripping blood, and cackles, ha ha, gotcha. And goes down to tell his wife.
Does he for a moment consider that could have been his daughter's blood?
No.
Yeah. Okay.
No. And he does hear Fool moaning at the time of the stabbing because I feel like he's also being attacked by a dog. So he maybe thinks he hears Fool die. And he tells Mrs. Robeson, and she says, prove it. Like, I need to see proof. So they go back into the room. They break that part of the wall down, and out falls their dog. And their dog's name is Prince. And Mommy yells, "You killed Prince!" She's just constantly screaming. And now Alice and Fool have made it up to the very top of the house in the attic. There is one window that opens. Fool says, "Great, we can get out this way." And she says, "No, there's nothing to hang on to. It's a straight drop. And it's too high." And Fool had noticed earlier when he was in the Boy Scout uniform and like scoping out the place that there's a little pond, like a small lake.
Mm.
And he's like, "I think we can slide down the roof. The lake is right there." And she's like, "What if it's not deep enough?" He's like, "I don't know. It's our best option right now."
He's not wrong about that.
Yeah. So he slides down the roof. He's calling Alice to come after him. Alice is really scared, doesn't want to do it. And then Mommy and Daddy get into the room.
Oh, geez.
And Fool slides off and Alice doesn't. And Fool like calls out like, "I'm coming, but I'll be back for you, Alice." And runs away. The lake was deep enough he wasn't injured or anything. And so,
great fucking plan.
Yeah. So the dad does like run out with the shotgun and try to chase him. But then the mom comes out and is saying like, "What are you thinking? Shooting outside? Are you insane?" And it makes him come back inside and then is going like, "Daddy's such a bad boy. Daddy, what are you thinking, Daddy?" And
I hate that.
Go back inside. And now we see Fool has made it home. He is showing his grandpa the gold. We're not immediately talking about Alice for some reason, but his grandpa confirms this is enough for rent until the year 2000. and hospital bills.
So far away.
Everything.
I still
will
think
be-
you guys should move if these people are your landlords.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, true. You'd be like paying them that money. So the grandpa is telling them that, yeah, this is a lot of money. And they're talking about the Robesons, and grandpa is saying how that family's always been off for generations. It started as a funeral home, and then they started getting into real estate, and they got richer, and the more money they got, the greedier they got. And then he's like, those siblings are the worst. And he's like, siblings? And he confirms that, yes, mommy and daddy are actually brother and sister.
Ew! They're brother and sister?
They're brother and sister.
Oh, what the fuck?
Ew.
Yeah, I mean, it's not good.
That is not good. It got worse. The situation got worse.
Yeah. But I really do want to emphasize their performances are really over the top and insane in I think, a very fun way.
Well, they were having a lot of fun, as we've heard.
They were having a lot of fun. We got to remember that.
We got to just remember that. It was fun for them.
Twin Peaks, they're doing similar styles of acting as their Twin Peaks roles. And I don't really know why Fool is not being more adamant about, like, we got to go over there, or someone has to go over there. So, but he is, but he says it later to his sister. They're not really, that's not the focal point of the first conversation he has.
Yeah, it should have been an immediate.
I would have thought yeah, that would be a higher priority than how much is this gold worth.
Yeah.
But then he says to his sister, I think maybe his grandpa says something like, you got to stay away from that house. But I feel like he didn't explain the situation maybe well enough.
Mm-hmm.
But Fool, once again, feels the burden on his shoulders and says, I got to do something about this. Somebody has to do something about this. And he heads outside and he's marching down the street. And we're thinking he's going like straight to the house by himself. And I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? And he goes to a payphone and he calls the police.
Nice. Okay, great. Love that.
I really liked that. And the police arrive at the house and the Robesons are putting on a
show.
A real show. The place is all of a sudden really clean. I would assume that once someone escapes your house that has seen the things that they have seen, you would be like, okay, well, the police are coming soon.
That is a good point. Yeah,
so
yeah.
I think they've been spending this entire time making everything really look good, and everything seems totally normal. We did find out that the people under the stairs have been lightly tranquilized for the past couple hours or whatever, like for this time. No one's making any noise. Cops aren't hearing everything. Everything seems to be in order. And then they see Alice's room and say, I thought you said you didn't have a daughter. I can't remember why they say they don't have a daughter. I guess because if they saw Alice, she would be like, help me. Uh-huh. So Alice is probably also locked away somewhere. But they find her room and they're like, well, what's this? And they have a story at the ready of Alice left us years ago, but we couldn't bear to take her bedroom down. So it feels like she's still with us and she always will be.
Ugh.
And the police are totally satisfied with this and they leave and they're like, well, sorry for bothering you, ma'am. Oh, because Fool had told the police, he's like, I need to report a case of child abuse. And so the cops are now like, well, there's no children here. So obviously this was incorrect. They leave. We hear Mrs. Robeson say to her brother because a lot of the doors were open, because normally they keep everything on absolute lockdown constantly, she's like, do you think any of them got away? And he's like, no, they're pretty heavily tranquilized, it'll be good. And they're turning all the lights off now, it's bedtime, and she's saying good night, daddy. He says good night, mommy. They're saying their prayers together. They obviously sleep in the same bedroom. And instead of one of the people under the stairs getting out, we see that fool has gotten in. And so even though he did a smart thing earlier, he's still
in
the house by himself yet again. And he grabs a gorgeous fire poker. Would a fool grab a fire poker?
Absolutely not.
I don't think so. And he follows the noises of mommy and daddy's prayers and gets to their bedroom and sees that it is a tape recording playing their voices. Daddy in his head to toe leather outfit lunges out at fool. But a fire poker is an unparalleled weapon, I think. Fool is able to... he hits them both and they are fall down, and it gives him a head start to be able to run downstairs. And when they run down, they can't find him. And they're like, what the fuck? Like, the doors are locked. He couldn't get out. What's going on? Where is he? He's got to be in here somewhere. They go back upstairs and we see that he is hiding in the chimney. He's crawled like into the fireplace and has like pressed himself up.
Nice.
In the chimney.
Is this a Christmas movie?
Yeah.
Santa?
And so he shimmies up the chimney to the attic. There's like a missing brick. And we see that Alice is chained up in the attic.
Oh, no.
But she's chained to the bricks of the chimney. So he's able to pop out the brick from the other side that she's chained to, which like lets her loose.
Whoa.
And they're trying to pop out as many bricks as they can so that he can crawl out of the chimney to where she is. But then daddy's coming up the stairs. So she puts her hands back up where they were chained and acts like everything's normal. Daddy comes in and we hear mommy going, Daddy, come back down here and help me to bed. And so daddy goes back downstairs and fool gets in. Now they pop out enough bricks that he's able to get into the attic with her. And he's telling her that his grandpa told him that these are not her real parents and that they kidnapped her and that she is not related to them. And so she's ready to get out of there now too. And I mean, she's been ready, but
yeah,
now she's extra like, all right, yeah, fuck this place. And fool makes a run for the attic window that you can slide down into the lake from, how they got out last time. Alice stops him, says, first thing he did, after you left, was drain the lake and fill it with broken glass. So
yeah,
our one exit is not available anymore.
He was wrong to think that he would be able to use the same escape twice.
Yeah. Yeah. So they've got to figure something else out. They climb into the chimney and climb all the way up and out of it onto the roof. And then mommy and daddy are in their bedroom, which also has a fireplace on the second floor. So there's a fireplace on the first floor and the second floor connected by the same chimney. They make noise so that they get their attention. And daddy sticks his head in the fireplace and is looking up, and they start dropping bricks down on him.
Nice. Oh.
And knock him out. And then mommy's in there screaming up at them with the shotgun now. So they drop down like as fast as they can, again, like the Matrix, and and just like land on her really hard.
What if the Matrix was 100% inspired by this movie? Everything about it.
I bet it was a little bit inspired. So they land on mommy really hard and kind of knock her out. Fool keeps going down, or no, they both now go down to the first floor and through the chimney. And Fool tells Alice to go out through, I don't know, some door that I was like, well, I didn't know that there was a door that we could get out of here, but it seems like Alice is heading somewhere to relative safety, hopefully, while Fool is like, I'm gonna go get everybody out of the basement.
Oh.
Alice is in the living room alone when mommy comes down and finds her.
No.
And she's screaming at her. And then there's a knock at the door. And they're like, maybe it's the police again. So mommy is like completely looks so crazy. She's got like blood on her and like dust from the fireplace, ash and stuff. And she's got a gun in her hand. And she just like kind of tries to brush herself off to look normal. When she like holds the gun behind her back and then opens the door. And it's Ruby, Fool's sister. And she starts yelling at her and is Ruby starts. She's basically saying like, oh, we're tenants of the neighborhood that you're trying to run us all out of town. And I just want to see what you have to say for yourself. Mommy slams that door in her face. And we see that Daddy has found Fool in the basement. Is holding him at gunpoint now with a shotgun again. And says, kiss your ass goodbye, boy. And then all these lights shine in his eyes and he can't see anything. All of a sudden he's like, oh, and all the people under the stairs have flashlights. There's like a funny line earlier where Alice says like, they all have flashlights. So they have something to do. Like
something to do.
And she like says something about the flashlights. Like it's not so bad. They all have flashlights. And he gets momentarily blinded by all these flashlights, which gives Fool a chance to get away. And Fool, I think, runs in with the people under the stairs at this point. And there's another knock at the door. She answers it again. And now it's the grandpa and Ruby. And they're saying, like, you're ruining our community. And Mrs. Robeson says, there's no community here. Or she says, she's like about to drop the N-word. You like get the, she's like, all I see is a bunch of, and as she's like about to say it, there's like the whole town comes around the corner and like all of the residents from the neighborhood are there. And Alice drops down from the ceiling, like a little crawl space on top of mommy, knocks her out again. And everyone like sees Alice sympathetically and is like, oh my God, all the rumors were true. Like there's just like little children being held captive in here. Ruby makes it inside. They're going to try to find Fool. Fool is telling all the people under the stairs, like, I want to get you out of here. You guys need to like feel the sunshine on your face again. And like, you still have a life ahead of you. And aww. All of the people under the stairs are like, ooh, they can't say anything. And one of them is signaling to him that he's like holding his hands open, like he wants to give him something. And he leads him to this vault of treasure filled with money and coins, like so much gold. And Fool is, you know, shocked to see this. So it's a lot of money. And or he says something like, oh, like, this is why there's no money in the projects. Like, they have all the money. And we cut back to Alice and Mommy are in the kitchen. Mommy's attacking Alice with a knife, knocks her down onto the stairs. And is like stabbing at her with this massive knife. And she's like realized that she's been, Fool has turned Alice against her and is now like, well, there's.
And a bunch of people have seen what's going on in there.
Yeah, she's like, okay, so yeah, I just have to kill Alice now. And as she's got her pinned down on the stairs, hands burst through the stairs and the people under the stairs start bursting through different parts of the walls.
Whoa.
And like attacking. Nice. Mommy and biting her and they're like chasing her around the house for a bit, and they chase her into Alice is holding the knife that her mom has, and the mom basically like runs into the knife, stabs herself in the stomach essentially.
Great. Okay.
And she says to Alice, you hurt your mother. Alice says, you're not my mother, never were. Mrs. Robeson says, then burn in hell, and tries like she's like still going to kill her. But then all the people under the stairs crowd around her, pin her down, and basically eat her alive.
Whoa.
Oh, sure.
Because where's Daddy? They are cannibals. Mm-hmm. Daddy was, I think, knocked out in the basement, but he's come to and he's still in his bondage. And he sees her. He comes upstairs and sees this and goes, "Mommy." And he runs back down to Fool in the basement, who has found all of his treasure. There's also a lot of explosives in this room for some reason.
Sure,
at, at some point, Alice said that he keeps a lot of explosives around just in case. So
all his traps and tricks.
Yeah. So Mr. Robeson is looking for Fool, and he hears little coins dropping, and he goes, "I know what you're doing. You're counting your money, and you're flipping it through your fingers." He's like, "I've done the same thing," and he's following the noise of it and rounds a corner, and it's like a candelabra with coins dug into different points of each candle so that as it melts and hits the coin, a coin drops.
That is, like, incredibly elaborate.
A very, very smart plan.
To do in the past 30 seconds.
Yeah.
45 seconds.
Yeah. But it worked. And so he's now, I mean, I don't know. Then Fool does pop out, but he's got the wires to the explosives and is holding them like, if you, like, I don't want to kill you, but I will. There's why do you have so many explosives down here? And basically tells him to drop his gun and give it up. And it's clear that Daddy's not going to do that. Mm-mm. And so Fool tells him to, he says, "Well, then kiss your ass goodbye." Presses those wires together, it explodes. Fool is also directly next to the explosion, but it doesn't seem to, he doesn't seem too worried about that, and he does survive and he's totally fine.
Okay, so cool.
Whereas Daddy and Mommy are both dead. And
okay, all right.
Because this explosion, it's a huge explosion, and it causes all the money to fly into the air, and all the residents of the neighborhood are outside, and so everyone's like catching money and cheering, and all the people under the stairs come out and they're like catching money and like liking.
I was gonna say, they definitely deserve some of that money.
Yeah. And so it's like turns into a party. This like music comes on at the end, like everyone's like grabbing money out of the air and cheering, and it's like, woo, we see that Alice is okay, Fool's okay. Oh, Alice like runs to Fool's side and is like, "Are you okay? How are you feeling?" And Fool has this unreadable expression. He goes, "I feel like a million bucks." And everyone's partying and dancing, and that's the end of the movie.
What? Wow, what a happy ending.
It was so surprisingly happy. That never happens in a horror movie.
I know.
I was really not expecting the people under the stairs to be the heroes.
I know.
No, me either.
So that's
nice. They got what they deserved.
Yeah. And a nice little redistribution of wealth via explosion. Yeah, via money explosion.
And I like that the money is coins. I'm picturing coins.
Yeah,
it's like Pirates of the Caribbean. Yes, like exactly. The chest of coins.
It's like Mario. Exactly. Like, I was a little confused as to why they deal in coins. But, you know, maybe they explained it at some point, I guess.
Wow.
That was the 90s, you know, everybody had coins.
Yeah. Yeah. So everybody lived happily ever after.
Wow.
It was the 90s, though, so this wasn't a big time for therapy, unfortunately, because you'd love to think that they'd all go into therapy.
Alice is not okay.
No. None of those people under the stairs are okay.
No, they're not okay at all.
It feels like a very prescient film, a very prescient or very knowing film to be made in the 1991. There weren't a lot of films being made that like explored racism in that way.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Especially among housing, because like housing is where a lot of racism happened for a lot of years.
It's just like the institutionalized way that it affects those communities. Yeah. It's, I mean, and we've talked about in horror, like representation of Black people in general in horror is like so, especially in the, you know, 90s and prior to that, it's like that was not normally good representation.
Mm-hmm. Super one note.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I thought this was a cool message. Cool message. Happy ending.
Happy ending.
Yeah.
I fucking love a happy ending.
Pretty fun time. Everybody's having a pretty fun time.
You know, in Shakespeare, you call tragedy a tragedy because everyone dies, or comedy because someone gets married in the end. Can you call a horror movie if it's a happy ending?
It does take some of the horror out of it, for sure.
It definitely does. But I mean, you know.
It's definitely horrific, but I'm just saying. I mean, are there any rules we want to state about a happy ending or no happy ending, you know?
I think it can still be a horror movie. It does.
Get Out kind of has a happy ending.
Yeah. What does?
Get Out. Yeah, I still call that horror.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Horror's going to have happy endings, but it's less common, I feel like. And I tend to prefer a sad ending. You know me. Yeah.
They definitely rarely end in a big money party.
No. Yeah. I did love to see it, though, because you never see it.
It sounds very fun.
Yeah.
Coins raining down from the sky, but he's dancing in the street.
It would hurt. It would hurt to have a coin hit.
It's a little bit scary.
I don't know if the coins were flying. It was dollar bills that were flying, and then the coins were maybe already.
I didn't know there even were dollar bills. Yes, I was expecting both. I was picturing just coins.
It's a lot of bills and then a lot of coins, and so I think it's basically just the bills flying from the sky, and then you got to go and grab the coins from the ground. Yep.
Okay. Okay. Really fun. Really fun for everyone.
Really fun. Yeah.
So much fun.
Great timing for that to be the night that the neighborhood decided to finally gather together.
Yeah. Yeah.
A block party.
Yep.
Love it. Thank you, patrons. No, I have been really curious about this one. And
I'm very curious for a Jordan Peele produced remake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Me too.
I will be watching it. We will be covering
it. That's
very
interesting.
Here. Watch this space.
Watch this space.
And we love you guys a lot. I guess I'll just scream the outro.
Yeah, I think you should just scream.
From all of us here at Too Scary Didn't Watch, goodbye!
Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Too Scary Didn't Watch. If you like the show, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and give us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can follow us on social media at TSDW Podcast on Instagram and Twitter. And if one episode a week just is not enough for you, head on over to patreon.com/TSDW Podcast to become a patron and receive all sorts of extra goodies from us, including bonus episodes, trailer reactions, and more. And no matter what, we will see you right here next week for another episode. We love you so much. Bye.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.